And now on Radio 4, the singer Julia Cogan explores a little-known side to the golden age of film music in The Lost Songs of Hollywood.
What do these pieces of music have in common? Yes, they're all classic film soundtracks. And they all transport you to a specific time and place, whether it's a godforsaken saloon in a Midwestern dust bowl, a plantation in the Deep South, or scrambling up a New York skyscraper. It's the sound of America. But there's something else these pieces have in common. All of them were written by refugees arriving in Los Angeles before World War II. Forced to run for their lives, some of Europe's finest composers brought its classical orchestral tradition with them. The result is the stuff of legend. Take this example. Ukrainian Jewish-born Dmitry Tiomkin worked as a concert pianist and composer in cities across Europe before landing in the States in the late 20s. Tiomkin became the most highly paid film composer in Hollywood, creating soundtracks that were quintessentially American, from epic Texas drama Giant and westerns like High Noon to It's a Wonderful Life and Hitchcock's Strangers on a Train. The first time I ever heard the name Dmitry Tiomkin, I was sitting in a film music class, and the professor played us the Rawhide theme that goes rollin', rollin', rollin'. Everyone thought that it was the most American thing that they'd ever heard. I was so surprised to find out that it was written by a Ukrainian Jew who couldn't say a sentence in English without stumbling. I've come to the studio at Warner Brothers in Los Angeles, where so many of Tiomkin's greatest scores were recorded, to meet music orchestrator, arranger, and Tiomkin expert Patrick Kruss.
You'll notice in pictures from Alfred Hitchcock's films that he's sitting very near where you're sitting now for the films Dial M for Murder, I Confess, and Strangers on a Train, which were all recorded in this room. And those were all Tiomkin scores.
And what made him so remarkably successful and so incredibly adaptable within this world?
He could write like a chameleon, whether he added very sophisticated jazz chords or very simple country western. It didn't matter to him. He understood genre really well. And he said, the steppes of Georgia aren't so different from the plains of America. And he said, the Cossack who rides a horse is very similar in temperament to the cowboy in the plains. So he felt that he had an affinity for both, that they translated well.
Tiomkin is an example of an exiled composer who not only survived, but who managed to thrive in Hollywood. But his world of big recording studios and Oscar wins does not tell the whole story. I am a classical singer and an exile myself. During the Cold War, my family came to America from the Soviet Union through Vienna. I could tell my life story through the songs I heard and sang, since I always sang while moving from one country to another. I've long been curious about the effect of exile on other artists. For the composers who came to Hollywood, the move from Europe under the Nazis to the glitz and palm trees of Los Angeles must have been a surreal experience. Many went from household names to being completely unknown, having to rely on the film industry to make a living. But I was amazed to discover that after a day churning out blockbuster scores, many exiled composers would go home and write personal songs. That virtually unknown treasure trove wound up stashed away in dusty archives or in family desk drawers and is only now seeing the light of day for the first time. I want to find out whether these lost songs of Hollywood reveal a different side to the exiled composers. So I've come to Los Angeles to unearth and perform these forgotten masterpieces. Hello, Walter.
How nice to see you.
Oh, wonderful to see you. As a Jew, Walter Arlen was forced to flee Austria in 1939, arriving in Chicago before moving to Los Angeles. He would compose only sporadically, spending decades without writing a note until his retirement, when music came pouring out of him again.
I've always been very satisfied with that piano.
He's the last remaining exiled composer in Hollywood, and I'll be singing some of Walter's songs to him and his guests at his 95th birthday party. But the day before, I went to his home in Santa Monica to find out how music and exile shaped the earlier part of his life.
I was shocked how Chicago looked. Don't forget, there was the end of the Depression, and Chicago looked like a ruin. They had all of these high-rises. They had built them. The money ran out. There were all these tall buildings that looked like skeletons, rusty skeletons.
What happened to your musical life when you came to Chicago?
Nothing. It was over. I had no access to a piano. I only could go to concerts. I had no music paper. I had no piano, nothing.
Walter would eventually return to composing, but how did the lifetime away from his homeland affect his musical identity? Michael Haas is a record producer, writer, and expert on the Jewish exiled composers.
Walter Arlen is the quintessence of what I would call the exile composer. He is a composer who wrote music that could never have been written by an Austrian who lived in Austria and remained in Austria. He wrote music that could never have been written by an American. It's a synthesis of personal experience. It just tortured him that so much of what he held to be really inalienable and unchangeable was suddenly ripped away from him. And he spent his entire life writing this music to work it out, to deal with the demons that he had to deal with.
Solemnly waiting for some strange consummation.
The feeling of neither belonging to the old world nor entirely to the new is all too familiar to me. That in-betweenness is what shapes the unique voice of the artist in exile. It's what makes Walter and others like him so important. To understand the path he traveled, I asked Walter to tell me about his childhood growing up in Vienna.
My mother played the piano. There was always music. They had phonographs and recordings. And they always went to concerts. And I spent a lot of time at the piano. When I composed something, I wanted to play it for my mother. She always said, "Oh, very nice, very nice. But go do your schoolwork."
It sounds like you were born into a very happy world and had a very happy childhood.
Yes, I had a very happy childhood.
And how did that change when Hitler came to power in 1933?
Well, it changed overnight. The Nazis came into our apartment, into many other people's apartments. I ran out at 2 in the morning to open the door, and there were 8 SA people there with rifles, and they had knocked on the door with their rifle butts. And they took my father, and they even heard them say, "Should we take the little Jew boy also?" And they didn't.
Thrown out of their home, the family endured a year of dreadful hardships. His father was later released and fled to England with Walter's mother and sister. But by then, Walter had escaped to America using an old visa the day before it expired.
I was on the train, and there was my mother and my sister and my grandmother, and the train rolled out, and I looked, and the tears were running down my cheeks. It was the last time I saw my grandmother. And what is there to say?
Yes.
The only way I could express myself is to cry. And then I didn't see my family for 8 years.
Mm.
Yeah.
Es geht wohl anders als du meinst. Es geht wohl anders als du meinst. Du weißt.
Shortly before Walter left Austria at the age of 18, he wrote an exceptionally touching song called Es geht wohl anders, which I'll sing at his party. I asked Walter what he meant by it.
It told the story of the day, in a way, because Es geht wohl anders, it comes differently or it happens differently than one thinks. My mother had gotten so bad that we had to watch her. She was always going up to the roof area, and I knew exactly why she wanted to throw herself down, which was eventually the kind of suicide she committed. She threw herself down a staircase.
Es geht wohl anders means things turn out differently. Things could turn out differently. Things should turn out differently.
Michael Haas again.
All of a sudden, the future is completely closed to him. He has no idea what's going to happen to him. It's not just Walter, but I've noticed this in actually many of the composers, that when they address the whole issue of what they're going through, the music is melancholic and sad rather than angry. It is this loss, this terrible, terrible loss.
Es geht wohl anders als man meint.
We'll come back to Walter's story again soon, but I wanted to know how exile personally affected Dmitri Tiomkin, whose Hollywood music was the soundtrack of America for decades. Ever adaptable, he prided himself on writing exactly what each movie called for, and remarked that if the critics didn't like his work, he would laugh all the way to the bank, like Liberace. So Tiomkin seemed happy writing American-sounding music for films, but what does the music he wrote in private tell us? Back at the Warner Brothers studio, I recorded Sweet Surrender with Alan Steinberger at the piano. Tiomkin wrote the song over 70 years ago, but it has only recently been edited by Patrick Cross for publication.
My love for you is deeper than the ocean. My love for you.
He wrote a musical called Bread and Honey. And it's about the promised land and its immigrants coming to America. They realized they needed a title song at the end of all, something that tied everything together. So Sweet Surrender was the title song they came up with. The whole project took place during the start of the war. So musicals took a bit of a back seat, and it didn't really get promoted and debuted in the way it probably should have.
Sweet Surrender is such a beautiful, sentimental song. The fact that he chose to write a musical about the positive aspects of the immigrant experience to America speaks volumes, even though it was never published. But Tiomkin's adaptability was uncommon. Many exile composers struggled to find their place. For them, the process was painful, and success in Hollywood largely inaccessible.
It was in such a deep depression. It was the darkest days of the war. I didn't know where my parents were, whether they were alive or my sister.
We're back with Walter Arlen in 1940, Chicago.
I was psychoanalyzed. It was 2 or 2.5 years of psychoanalysis. He said, if you don't compose, you'll be sick. And that was so true. When I didn't compose, I was sick.
Even though the world keeps changing quickly as flowers.
Right after the psychoanalysis, Walter wrote a collection of songs based on Rilke's Sonnets to Orpheus. One in particular embodies his predicament, even though the world keeps changing. For Walter, music was the link between past and present. But I wondered if you could hear an evolution from what he wrote in Austria to his American music. Michael Haas.
The musical language is far more American by this time than it is Austrian. I mean, once you compare it with Es geht wohl anders, it's much more lyric. You have a more obvious melodic structure and things like that. When you hear them, yes, you know it's American. You just don't know who it's by.
It may not sound like Gone with the Wind or King Kong, but it reminds me of the American classical songs of composers like Samuel Barber. It seems Walter was adapting, musically and personally, to his new life. What got me hooked on the subject of lost songs in the first place was the music of one exiled composer, Austrian Jewish-born Eric Zeisel. His daughter Barbara still lives in Los Angeles.
America gave him safety, but he had nostalgia. He longed to go back to his beloved Austria. As a child, I remember once that we would make Ausflüge every weekend, that is, excursions into the countryside and take walks. And one time I just raved about a meadow, and I said, "Look at that meadow, there's so many beautiful flowers." And my father said, "That's not a meadow. Those aren't mountains. You only can find that in Austria."
You know, everybody else thinks they've landed in paradise because it's summer all the time.
Producer and author Michael Haas again.
But Eric has a sun allergy, so he can't even go out in the sun without broad-brimmed hats and, you know, long sleeves and gloves and all the rest of it. And there are photographs of him playing with Barbara, his daughter, on the beach. And he's completely covered up while she's splashing away in the surf in a little bathing suit and enjoying herself. He didn't enjoy himself. He didn't. I don't think he got on with the food. Nothing really agreed with him.
Professionally, too, Zeisel had fallen through the cracks. He had just started to make a name for himself in Vienna when he arrived in a Hollywood saturated with well-known composers. The Korngolds, Steiners, and Waxmans already had the work sewn up. He spent several years filling in gaps on scores for films such as Lassie Come Home and The Postman Rings Twice, but he was never credited. After the war, Zeisel stopped writing for films altogether. In 1959, the year Dmitri Tiomkin won an Oscar for his score to The Old Man and the Sea, Zeisel died of a heart attack, aged just 53. In the years before his death, he wrote exquisite music for the concert stage, but he never returned to writing the Lieder or German classical songs that had built his reputation in Europe.
Although he wrote almost 100 Lieder in Vienna, when he came to America after he had to flee, he never wrote a single song again. The Lieder were so tied up with Austria and with the landscape, which he really loved so much, that it was sort of cut off from him.
Zeisel wrote only one song after he moved to the States, and I wanted to sing it to Barbara. It's a Jewish prayer that I adore, an epic anthem to the ideal of peace amongst all nations. Before singing, I asked Barbara if Zeisel's sense of his Jewishness became more important to him once he'd moved to America.
When he left Austria, he was no longer an Austrian. He was kicked out and lost his identity. He came to America. He did not receive his citizenship till 1945, but he was a Jew. And all of the chamber works that he wrote here definitely have a Hebraic quality to them, undeniable. He was no longer an Austrian, he wasn't really an American, but he was a Jew.
Thus says the Lord.
can say is whew. Really, very moving to me. It's a beautiful, beautiful song. And you have a wonderful voice. You're a tiny little person. And
thank you. It's almost
overwhelming.
It is almost overwhelmingly powerful to sing. Yeah. It's such a moving piece.
Yeah. So,
thank you.
The Lost Songs of Hollywood is about music that's been ignored and forgotten. But sadly, the story of the Exiles is also a story of interrupted lives and music that was simply never written. Walter Arlen left Chicago for California in 1950, and for the next 36 years, he worked as a music critic for the LA Times, convinced that writing music himself, while he judged others, would have been a conflict of interest. In 1986, though, the urge to compose became too strong. Walter left the LA Times and dusted down his manuscript paper.
There's so much now that it isn't, it's too much for a desk drawer. By now, it's all over the place. There was a set of poems by St. John at the Cross, and they were so beautiful. One day I took this poetry and started composing, and the incredible thing was, even without a piano, I just wrote the songs one after the other.
How did it feel to write after so many years away?
Like I had never stopped. And I was so surprised finally when I didn't even have a piano at the time. When I got a piano, and then I could play these things. And I was thought, well, this is, I think I did pretty well here.
Walter went on to write over 50 songs, even after losing his sight in his early 80s. On his 95th birthday, Walter and his friends, along with me and pianist E. Dan Gillen, crowded into the small room at the top of his house where he still composes today.
When I started looking into that repertoire, it was really quite overwhelming and striking, the kinds of masterpieces that have been completely ignored. So here are a few of Walter's wonderful, wonderful songs.
There we were, dozens of guests, and the performers crowded into this tiny, boiling room. It must have been 100 degrees, and everyone was soaking wet. And still, it was such a special moment to be there with Walter on his 95th birthday, singing his music.
Walter, how did you enjoy your birthday party?
Well, it was a terrific party, thanks to you. I had no idea it was going to be that lively and that much food. Take some back to England.
Your songs have sat in your desk drawer, unperformed, unrecorded, unpublished, until you were 93 years old. How do you feel about them being out in the public domain and people hearing them?
Oh, well, it's a great pleasure. I never thought that my music would go beyond this house.
So you feel quite optimistic about your legacy?
Yeah, I feel optimistic.
They
can't
be
completely forgotten. I had a little something to say about a specific period, and I feel very sorry about the fate of my parents, especially my mother. And when I played things at the piano, she only laughed. She said, "Sehr schön," very nice, you know. I think now if she heard these things, she would probably say a little more than very nice.
My week in Los Angeles was unforgettable. There were ghosts of precious souls passed in the air. Zeisel, Tiomkin, and others. We'll never know what they would have written had things, to quote Walter, turned out differently. The stories we've told barely touch the tip of an iceberg. Although many exile composers scatter to the four corners of the earth, even the greatest of those who ended up in L.A. are too numerous to mention here. It's impossible to overstate the importance of their work for Hollywood. But their intimate lost songs enabled them to cope with the trauma and transition of exile, turning their life experience into music. And for that, they are especially precious. I'd like to end, as I did at Walter's party, with the first song he ever wrote, a lullaby for the birth of his nephew. Sing a sweet and gentle song, welling up like a spring on pebbles, like bees on tree blossoms, humming, murmuring, whispering, lulling.
The Lost Songs of Hollywood was presented by Julia Cogan, and the producer was Chris Alcom. It was a Something Else production for BBC Radio 4.